music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. This is the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, it's Kelly, and thank you for joining us on the show. This week, it is all about laughs. We're chatting with two talented comedians who recently played the world-renowned Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal. Up first is New York's own Gina Brillin, who has some great commentary about millennials. We then chat with Chicago's Matteo Lane, who now calls New York City home. He's got lots to say about being a podcast host and why he loves Mariah Carey so much. We also have new music from DJ Khaled, David Guetta, and the Chainsmokers. But first, it's back to 1991 with Color Me Bad's number one song, I Wanna Sex You Up, on The Kelly Alexander Show. TikTok, you don't stop, stop. To the TikTok, you don't stop, stop. To the TikTok, you don't stop, stop. To the TikTok, you don't stop.
Inside, take off your coat, I'll make you feel at home. Now let's pour a glass of wine, cause now we're all alone. I've been waiting all night, so just let me hold you close to me. Cause I've been dying for you, girl, to make love to me. Girl, you make me feel real good. We can do it till we both wake up.
On The Kelly Alexander Show.
We the best music. Another one. DJ Khaled.
You stick out of the crowd, baby, it's a no-brainer. It ain't the hard to choose. Him or me, be for real, baby, it's a no-brainer. You got your mind on loose. Go hard and watch the sunrise. One night, it changed your whole life.
drop top, drop top, baby, it's a no-brainer. Put them up if you with me, yeah.
This whole time, I blow the brains out of your mind. And I ain't talking about physically, I'm talking about mentally. She looking, she look like she nasty. She looking, she look like she classy. She looking, just look at her dancing. Look at her, she looking, I took her to the mansion. Yeah, yeah.
You sneak out of the crowd, baby, it's a no-brainer. It ain't the hard to choose. Him or me, be for real, baby, it's a no-brainer. You got your mind on loose. Go hard and watch the sunrise. Change your whole life. Pop top, drop top, baby, it's a no-brainer. Put them up if you with me, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I ain't got no chain. Not on the list, I ain't got no name. But we in it, I'm not no lame. And I keep it Franklin, I'm not gonna change. A lot of these messy. I just want you and your bestie. I don't got an answer for whenever you text me. It's multiple choice and you don't wanna test me. She choosing a squad. She trying to choose between me, Justin Quay, and the sword. She told me that she love that I make music for God. I told her I would let her see that blood.
You stick out of the crowd, baby, it's a no. It ain't the hard to choose. Him or me, be for real, baby, it's a no-brainer. You got your mind on loose. Go hard and watch the sunrise. One night, it changed your whole life. Pop top, drop top, baby, it's a no-brainer. Put him up if you with me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Me sitting up, demanding my attention, had to give it up. Look like somebody designed you, dropped it gorgeous. You made me wanna live it up. Your presence is critical, moving my soul, yeah, you're spiritual. They hate it when you notice me, make everybody else invisible. Breaking all the rules, so above the law. I'll be your excuse.
Damn right.
You go wrong, no. You sneak out of the crowd, baby, it's a no.
New music from DJ Khaled featuring Justin Bieber, Chance the Rapper, and Quavo. It's No Brainer on The Kelly Alexander Show. How you doing? It's Kelly, and we're happy to welcome actress, writer, and comedian Gina Brillin to the program. Gina hails from the Bronx and has been a stand-up comic since the age of 17 and has appeared on shows like Chelsea Lately, The View, and Late Night with Seth Meyers. I recently saw Gina perform at the famous Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal, and she totally knocked it out of the ballpark as part of the Ethnic Show. Gina, welcome to The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on today.
So I have to start off by asking you, you know, how early in life did you know you wanted to tell jokes on stage? Because, you know, if you started at 17, you must have known fairly early on that you wanted to be funny or that you were funny.
Yeah, at a young age, I always liked to make people laugh. I couldn't see anybody sad. So when I was a kid, I would put on these little productions. Specifically for my grandmother, I would make her laugh a lot. And when I turned 14, I saw Brett Butler for the first time, and that kind of did it for me. I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to tell jokes to strangers and pray to God they laugh.
Now, you mentioned your family. Were all of them sort of supportive right off the hop of you wanting to start your stand-up career or your comedic career?
They were, actually. My family was very supportive. I lucked out, and I had one of the few supportive families, which is interesting. Being Latino, I think I would not have been surprised if they were like, I'm sorry, you want to do what now? But they were very supportive and always believed in me and still do to this day. So it's been great to have their support.
Can you remember your first act and how you went about putting it together?
Yeah, it was weird. I just sort of knew how to, I'd watched so much comedy. I'd watched so much stand-up. I think my first 5 minutes, if I were to go back and watch it, I'm sure I'd have a million things to say about it. But the first 5 minutes that I did, I was surprisingly well educated on how to put together a stand-up comedy set. So it went pretty effortlessly.
Can you talk to us as well, because I mentioned to you off air, but I've been watching a lot of, you know, your sets and stuff online, just sort of checking out the different things that you've done. And I have to say that I've noticed that you're really good about the pregnant pause and being okay with silence, and your face is always super reactive. How do you go about, like, is that timing just intrinsic for you, or have you had to work on that?
I think it's something you learn over time to get comfortable with pausing and understanding that, you know, silence doesn't always mean a bad thing. Silence often means the audience is actually engaged and listening. And so you have to get used to that as a comic. And that does take time, because when you first start, you want to laugh every couple of seconds. It's almost like a drug where you need that laugh every couple of seconds or you feel like you're failing. The more experienced you get, the more comfortable you can be taking your time on stage and waiting for the big payoff. And the audience is usually pretty in tune to your confidence level. So the more confident you are in your ability to take your time with it, the more they will just go along with it.
How often do you update your act or change it completely? Because I'm assuming you always want to stay fresh, but obviously you have to take your time and travel with that show. So how does that work for you?
You know, a lot of times, I mean, I'm writing constantly, but there's a lot of stuff, you know, as a comic, you know, you work out material and you kind of want to put it into your set or into a special when it's fully ready. Some bits you write are short and sweet and quick and take no time to prepare. And I have a couple of those. And then there are longer stories or longer points that you want to make that take a little more time to work it out. So, you know, I write so much, and then I usually go up and try new stuff especially if I'm in Manhattan. At least once or twice a week, I'll do a show where I know I can do all new material. And it's like in 7 to 8 minute increments, you know, you kind of couple your stuff together as best as you can.
Now, can you talk to us a little bit? I actually even hate asking this question because I wish I didn't have to bring this up, but I feel like it's still a question. Is it challenging or more challenging to be a female comedian, or do you think things are changing in the right direction where you're all just looked upon as comedians?
It is more challenging. I know there's a lot of female comics that, you know, hate saying that or maybe hate making that admission. It's more challenging, I mean, basically because of numbers. You are outnumbered. This is a male-dominated business. It has been for years. So there are naturally more men that you're going to see than women. It's also a little bit of a tough business because, I mean, you do run into a lot of scumbags that hit on you and are inappropriate. And it's not every comic. It's not every booker. It's not every person in the industry that's like that. But the ones that you run into and the situations you have, I mean, that it's sad to say many of us have those Me Too stories. Many of us have that. And that does create a lot of problems for a woman. You know, I travel by myself all the time. I'm on the road. I constantly have to be aware of things that a male comic may not necessarily have to be aware of.
And speaking of that, just with the Me Too situation, I'm not, I know the act that I saw that wasn't a part of it. Would you think, because obviously, I mean, Me Too is nothing really to be laughed at, but of course there's a way I'm you know, supposing of seeing it in a certain light. Do you think you'll ever add that into your set, some sort of take on it?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to. Honestly, I would love to. I tend to wait till people are a little desensitized to a subject like that before tackling it, because it can be very divisive. You say the wrong thing and you've already split the room, and then you have the trouble of winning them back. But if you give it enough time, you know, I do believe, and that's coming from the school of thought of like people like Carlin, who said anything can be funny if it's, you know, handled correctly. And I totally think that that can be the case with this. I mean, there are a lot of people that have jokes now, at least I know in New York, about the whole movement and about, you know, how men have to be careful now. And it's very true. And I think there can be some funny to find in it, especially from a female perspective.
Now, I know you don't only do comedy. I know that you're an actress. I believe there's some singing in there as well, and also being a writer. So being in that entertainment milieu, do you find that things are changing since the Me Too movement has started, or do you still think it's going to be quite challenging for up-and-comers to navigate themselves, females, through this industry?
I hope that this causes some change. I hope that there is a shift in how people are treated, men and women alike. I would hope that something like this movement would create enough dialogue and that equality comes out of it, or some sort of equality in treatment and equality in other aspects, in pay and everything, and opportunities. I really hope that this is one thing that I will say about this generation. A lot of people poke fun at the millennials and the younger generations, but these are the generations that are as active and making as many changes and trying to change policies and things as people in the 60s and 70s did. So I am hoping that this movement can create enough dialogue that change does naturally occur for up-and-coming performers.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is comedian Gina Brillin. Make sure you follow her on her website to grab all of her social media handles, GinaBrillinComedy.com. I wanted to ask you, what do you consider your first big comedic break? Like, what do you think has really opened doors for you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the biggest break that I ever got would have to be the special that Gabriel Iglesias produced. That would definitely be one of the bigger, I mean, it's one of the most amazing experiences of my life. So I've done an hour special with somebody that I admire, and the special went great, and I loved it, and it's something I'm very proud of, and I can't wait to do. It's been long enough. I'm long overdue for another one, so I'm looking forward to that in the future.
Now, can you talk just a little bit about Montreal's Just for Laughs Festival? Obviously, we're so happy to have you up here and a part of the festival. What does it mean to you? Does it hold a special place in your heart?
Oh, it absolutely does. I love the festival. I've been lucky enough. This is my fourth year doing the festival. I'm honored every year they bring me back. The ethnic show is phenomenal. I get to meet new people, learn about new places, and do things and hang out with comics. It's like a summer camp for comics. And I've been here now, I think, about 2 weeks with the Ethnic Show, and we, you know, have the final week of craziness for the festival, and I can't wait. It's always been a blast. I get to see some comics I admire, and I get to work with people that are just phenomenal performers.
What's your favorite part of Montreal? Because you've been here a couple of times.
Oh gosh, the food. I got to be honest, the food is unbelievable here. I'm such a foodie, and I always look forward to exploring new restaurants and new places. So that's definitely second to that is how receptive the audiences are. Honestly, Montreal has such great comedy crowds, such a comedy savvy place. And so, I mean, those are my two favorite things.
Now, when I saw your set at the Ethnic Show, you had many different elements in there in the amount of time that you were given, which I thought was awesome. I really loved your commentary on millennials because I think it's, you know, like you mentioned before, they are a great generation, but obviously there's a lot to be made fun of as well. And then I noticed you did relationship things and then, you know, also talking about your heritage. When you're writing your comedy, do you sort of do like what people tell even songwriters to do, which is write what you know, or do you try to break out of that mold too?
I kind of stick to write what you know, because I would never want to speak on a subject or anything that I wasn't very knowledgeable on, because it might make me look really ignorant. Even if it's for the sake of a joke, I'm really cautious about what topics I tackle. You don't know a lot about a topic, and so it's hard to find a realistic, funny thought or funny thing about it if you don't kind of fully understand what it is. So I stick to what I know. I stick to a lot of stuff that I feel like is relatable to anybody, family, relationships, and life stuff that I've been through, that at least I have more knowledge of than any kind of big world issues. A big reason why I stay away from politics, too. I'm not very politically savvy, so I couldn't really speak. If I were to speak on behalf of anybody, I feel like I'd be an embarrassment. So I kind of steer clear from that.
I wanted to ask you as well, do you have any advice for aspiring comedians? Because, you know, it is obviously a challenging domain to be in. So what would you want to say to someone who's like, oh, I want to do what Gina's doing?
I always tell newer comedians the same thing. Get on stage as much as you can, because the stage has to be your second home. That has to be the place where you are so comfortable and you can say anything and you can be as confident as you possibly can. The more stage time you get, the more that place becomes such a safe place for you. And I always tell them that. It's just you have to become so damn comfortable on that stage. And it's totally worth it to just do different venues as well. I've performed in everything from catering halls to bars to actual comedy clubs to theaters. And when you have that wealth of experience, there's almost no gig that can be thrown your way that you're not going to be able to get through.
Do you find, Gina, that being a stand-up comedian, again, I know you have other, talents in your repertoire, again, with the being in the acting community and the writing and all that sort of stuff, but being a stand-up comic specifically, do you think you will always do this to some degree? Because I know, for example, for myself, I can't imagine not being on the radio. So, like, do you have that same sort of addiction to your career?
I think that at some point, you know, I don't know that I would ever want to stop doing stand-up. It's been my first love and the longest relationship in my life for so long. I love it. But when you start making your way into TV and film, I think what affects it more than necessarily your desire to do stand-up is your schedule. And it's more about if I made the leap into television and had a show on TV, yeah, it might be difficult if we're filming all week for me to actually get up on stage, which I think would drive me a little bit crazy. I can't see myself ever not doing stand-up, but I mean, never say never. I mean, I could end up being huge in movies and then, you know, every now and then come out with a special. Who knows?
And before I let you go, is there anything you could tell my audience about some of the things you're working on or that are going to come out in the next, like, 6 months to a year where we can see you again?
Absolutely. Yeah, I have a special coming out on HBO Latino. It's only about 20 minutes. They're doing English language specials. And I was part of a lineup of amazing comics. And it was a wonderful experience. I believe that comes out sometime in September. You guys can keep up with me on social media to find out all the information about that. But that's something I'm super excited about. And touring and other projects. I'm also in a Netflix movie called Alex Strangelove, which is a great coming out story of a kid in high school. So I am totally in support of the movie and the message behind it. And I have a very small role. I'm in it for 30 seconds at the beginning of the film, but it's a beautiful film and I absolutely love it. So you can check that out on Netflix. And also the Fluffy movie with Gabriel Iglesias. I'm also in that, which is also on Netflix, I believe.
That's fantastic. Well, as I told you off air, I just think you're fantastic. I'm so happy that you, you keep coming to Montreal. I hope you keep returning and you're welcome on the show anytime.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That's Gina Brillin, and you can follow her on her website, GinaBrillinComedy.com. Well, right now, let's hear some new music from David Guetta featuring Anne-Marie. David has said that Anne-Marie is an amazing artist, and he's super proud of the song that they have created. It's called Don't Leave Me Alone on The Kelly Alexander Show.
I don't wanna lie, can we be honest? Right now while you're sitting on my chest, I don't know what I'd do without your comfort. If you really go first, if you really left, I don't know if I would be alive today. With or without you like night and day, we didn't repeat every conversation. Being with you every day is a Saturday, but every Sunday you got me pray. Don't you ever leave me and don't you ever go. I've seen it on TV, I know how it goes. Even when you're angry, even when I'm cold, don't you ever leave me. Don't leave me alone. Don't leave me alone. Alone. I don't wanna call and you not answer, and never see your face light up my phone. See you singing Tiny Dancer every time my head hurts, every time I'm low. 'Cause I don't know if I would be alive today with or without you like night and day. Everything about you uncomplicated. Here with you every day is a Saturday, but every Sunday you got me praying. Don't you ever leave me, don't you ever go. I've seen it on TV, I know how it goes. Even when you're angry, even when I'm cold, don't you ever leave me. Don't leave me alone. Don't you ever go. Don't you ever leave me. No. Don't you ever leave me. Don't you ever go. I'm sitting on TV. I know how it goes. Even when you're angry. Even when I'm cold. Don't you ever leave me. Don't leave me alone. Don't you ever.
Cannot wait to play this new song for you. I was checking out some new Canadian releases and came upon this track from electronic music band Keys and Crates, who are out of Toronto. The band have been together for about 10 years, and they've recently released their debut album, Cura. This is their latest single from the album featuring singer Tony Lanez. It's called Music to My Ears on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Listen when you talk, babe. Listen when you talk, babe. Look at how I'm on it. Look at how I'm on it. I am not a DJ. This is not a replay. So gon' let me plug in. Hit it to the preset. Music to my ears. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Music to my ears. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Music to my ears. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When we love it, we touch. Famous, but they remain nameless. Shawty got me on a waiting list. Damn right, I'm awaiting this. Music to my ears. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
From comedian Mateo Lane, but first it's Alicia Keys off her album As I Am with Where Do We Go From Here. from her 2007 album, As I Am. That's Alicia Keys with Where Do We Go From Here? That album, by the way, debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 chart and sold over 740,000 copies in its first week, the highest ever for a female R&B artist, and eventually that album went triple platinum. Hey, it's Kelly, and we are excited to welcome stand-up comedian Mateo Lane to the show. I don't even know where to start with Mateo. Not only is he a comedian, but an opera singer, oil painter, and podcast host. I recently saw Mateo perform at the Just for Laughs Fest in Montreal, and he totally killed his set. Mateo, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. I love how you threw podcast host in there. It was like a red man, and just like anyone could be a podcast host. So I'm glad that that's a skill that I have.
Well, I think it is a skill because I was actually, when I found out you were a podcast host, I was like, okay, well, I got to go check this guy out. So I listened to one of your episodes. I think actually you were doing it from here via phone with Emma. So I thought you guys had a great rapport. So it was fun.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's basically we just talk relationships and sex, and that's pretty much it. But, it's funny. And I tell stories and it's just an excuse to talk with someone I like, basically.
Can you actually tell us how the podcast came about? Like, obviously, the two of you are both comedians. Was it an easy sort of discussion about how the podcast was going to sort of roll out?
Well, I think there's a lot of podcasts that comics do, and I think that sometimes they're too comedy heavy. Like, they're either like always talking about comedy, and it's so inside game, and I think it just can alienate larger audiences, and so Emma and I are both queer comics, and there's very, very few of us doing it in the world of stand-up. So we thought, you know what, let's do a podcast where it's not about us doing stand-up, and you know, you get to kind of see the other aspect of what a stand-up comedian does, and so we call it Inside the Closet. Like, what are the conversations happening behind the doors, you know?
And the response, obviously, from what I saw on iTunes, a lot of people love the show, and so do you have any sort of grand plans for it, or are you just going to continue to do it as long as it's fun?
Yeah, we have some big plans happening, but I'm not allowed to reveal them, but things are happening. They're in the works.
Fantastic. So I did want to start from the beginning with you specifically. I know you sort of hail from Chicago, but how did you end up then being over in Italy with this opera career?
So I'm from Chicago, Illinois. I am, you know, of Italian descent, and my mother is an illustrator, and not by job. I mean, she just can draw, and I think it happened to, I think talent must be in the genes, because my brother is like one of the top designers for Apple, and my sister is an interior decorator, and I can, you know, draw and all this stuff. And so I ended up going to the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, which led me to going to the University of Painting and Drawing in Umbria, Italy. And now I happen to have already studied opera when I was 15. So from 15 to 22, I was studying opera and sort of doing performances. And then that led me to, like, I thought it was going to be Mariah Carey, but I ended up just singing in like strip clubs in Chicago with these terrible drag queens. It was horrible, but I loved it. And so I kind of, it was like two things simultaneously happening at once. I wasn't singing opera in Italy, but I was painting in Italy, and then I was singing opera back in America. I sound like a mess.
You sound like you have a full life, that's for sure.
I've definitely led like seven gay lives.
So now, how did it come about that you decided you were going to start, you know, a comedic career? Like, how did that, or did you always have that sort of characteristic in you?
No, I mean, my plan was to be Mariah Carey when I was 14, but I think this is pretty close. And, you know, I grew up on the same block as my first 22 cousins, and I have a really funny family, and we sort of communicate through humor. And so it was a natural thing, but I never grew up watching comedy. I wasn't like a comedian or was a comedy fan. And I think it's just because there was no one speaking, like everyone was straight, talking about marriage, talking about girlfriends, boyfriends. Like I just didn't relate to anything. I just was sort of like, I never really got stand up, you know what I mean? Until I heard Margaret Cho, Kathy Griffin, and Joan Rivers, because they were the first ones speaking directly to me, which I think a lot of gay people relate to. And so when I was 18, I saw Joan do stand-up for the first time, and that's what made me want to do stand-up, was watching Joan Rivers. And then I think I was like 24 or 5, and my friend was dating a comedian, and I was like, I want to do stand-up. I mean, basically what I was saying is I want to be Joan Rivers. And so he's like, you can do 3 minutes on my show. So 38 members of my family came to watch me do 3 minutes, including my grandparents, and it was humiliating for everybody. But Yeah, that's kind of how it all started.
By the way, I love how much you love Mariah Carey, because that's how I feel about Janet Jackson. So I have to ask if you've met Mariah yet.
I've stood 5 feet away from her. I did the red carpet for Logo and VH1 for the Divas Live, the last Divas Live they did two years ago. And because I have a love-hate relationship with her. Like, I think she's one of the most talented people of all time, but she's also, like, wearing quinceañera dresses and lip syncing and, you know, just like doing stuff. I'm like, you're better than this. You know what I mean? Like, you're better than this. So I think she's just surrounded herself by really bad people. She seems very reactive, but I saw her on the red carpet. I was kind of mesmerized because the paparazzi were losing it. And from the side, I could sort of see like old Mariah Carey, meaning like fantasy Mariah Carey. But, you know, she was, I don't know. She seems better now. You know what I mean? She admitted she's bipolar, and that's like the most human thing she's done in 20 years. But I also love Janet Jackson. I'm a big Janet Jackson fan. My older brother, who's also gay, made me listen to Janet Jackson when I was little. And I saw her in concert recently, and she was amazing.
How do you go about crafting your sets?
That's a good question. I don't know. It still is kind of abstract to me. I'm not one of these comedians that sits at a coffee shop and writes for 5 hours and obsesses over the words, because that's just not who I am. I typically, when I'm in conversation and something strikes me as funny, I mark it down and then go on stage that night and sort of test it out, and I record it on my phone and then I listen back and then I can make notes. But every time I try and craft a joke, like sit down and write it, it just feels false. I mean, I think there's different types of comics and different types of performers. I think some people are very, you know, like studious about it. Like, they sit and they write and it's all about the wording and this kind of wording. It's almost like math. And then there's people who I think are just like gift to gab. I mean, they can just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, and that's just who they are. So that's what I love about comedy. There's all different types of comedians. But so my working is, I kind of do, I reverse engineer. I say the thing on stage, and then I listen back and edit it down and then do it again and again and again and again. So that's kind of how it works.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. And obviously, being a comic, you have to do a lot of traveling. How does that play into your life? Like, is it, do you sort of, you know, is it sort of one of the requirements of the job and you're just sort of okay with it? Or do you actually really enjoy traveling all over the place?
I enjoy traveling to places that don't yell the F word at me when I'm trying to get Starbucks. But, you know, like if I go to San Francisco or LA, or if I get to come here to Montreal, or if I get to go like I'm going to be performing in Italy in the fall, like that stuff excites me. Like, it's great. Like, I'm in an Airbnb, like, this is so ridiculous that I tell a couple of jokes and now people are paying me to come out to Canada, to one of the best cities in the world, and live in this beautiful, like, it's so ridiculous. You know what I mean? But then there's sometimes where, like, you're in the middle of Ohio and you want to just, like, you know, put a pillow over your face so you pass out.
I think that was in the set too, right? How much Ohio means to you. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I hate Ohio.
Speaking of Montreal, though, I did want to ask you about, you know, why Montreal holds such a special place in your heart, because I know that in 2014, I think it helped sort of launch you a little bit. So how do you feel about Just for Laughs?
Yes, it launched me to a studio apartment. I think it's the Just for Laughs Festival. I mean, when you first come, it's like you're a new face and it's secretive and you're like the new comic and everyone has their eyes on you and they want to see what you're all about. And older comics look at you and the industry looks at you, and it's like kind of overwhelming. But then once you like get used to being a comic and being used to the industry, and you realize like, oh, nothing really matters but just like the fact that I care about my jokes, the fact that I have good people around me, you know, it starts becoming less important, and it's just about like living your best life. I mean, you can only care so much about what other people think about you before it destroys you. So now when I come to Montreal, to me, it's a celebration of the hard work I've put into the past. So like, I get to hang out with Michelle Buteau, and I are going to get breakfast tomorrow, and I get to hang out with friends, and it's all about the hang. Comedians just want to be around comedians. We just want to talk to comedians. We just want to literally hang out with comedians all day. So when you get to do festivals like this, that's all we get to do. Just hang out with the comics, and that is the best part.
Now, because you've been to Montreal a couple of times, what's your favorite part about our city?
Well, I love Little Italy. I like that people actually can speak Italian here. And I love, I know it's so cliche to say, but I love old Montreal. It's just so unique because we don't have anything in America like that. I also love that it's a bilingual city. I mean, that speak French, but it's like I really sound like Mario Luigi when I speak it because I speak Italian. But I love that I can practice my French. I love that I can, you know, it's just a very culturally rich, interesting city, and it just has a lot to offer to people who are interested in culture. So yeah, I don't know. For me, I love it. And then the boys are all, it's like every boy is just good looking. I don't get it.
That must be something in our water. Before I let you go, I did want to ask you, I know you've had appearances on the Late Show with Stephen Colbert and also on Late Night with Seth Meyers. Can you talk to us about being on those late night shows and how maybe that has, again, boosted your career? Because so many people obviously watch those two programs.
Yeah, it's always fun to do a late night set. I actually did a third late night set before any of those, and they didn't air it because the host thought it was too gay. So that was, speaking of homophobia, that was interesting. So my experiences with Seth Meyers and Colbert were good experiences. I mean, they were wonderful and let me be myself, and the reaction has always been great, and it's nice to walk down the street and like see gay people be like, oh my God, like I saw you on TV. So yeah, anytime like, you know, you're exposing people to that, to another side of life that maybe they're not used to, it's always a good thing.
And what's up next for Mateo Lane? Is there anything you can let us know about before the end of, you know, 2018 into 2019?
Yeah, but stuff I can't talk about, but there's stuff happening. There's things in the work.
Okay.
So,
fantastic. Well, when the things are announced, will you come back on the show?
Yeah, of course. That'd be great.
Perfect. Awesome. Mateo, thank you so much for spending time with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Mateo Lane, and you can follow him on his website, MateoLaneComedy.com. Here comes new music now from Canadian artist Coleman Hell with Love is Blind on The Kelly Alexander Show.
It was on a Friday when I seen your face. You were looking over my way, stopped me in my place. High and superstitious, but that's been known to change when you're standing right beside me. Oh, this must be fate. It's not what you see, I just hope that you believe in the love that
side effect of my life. me the lesson. We're looking for a sign, but instead I got a message. I take on my pride every time we undressing. Draw the line, I'm out of line. Time should have taught me the lesson. We're looking for a sign, but instead I got a message. I take on my pride every time we undressing. Draw the line, I'm out of line.
Ooh, you're all that I am. No good at giving you up. Come on and give me some love tonight, yeah.
New music from the Chainsmokers featuring Emily Warren with Side Effects on The Kelly Alexander Show. And if you happen to be in Montreal this August, the Chainsmokers are playing EDM Fest Il Cynique, and you know they're going to put on a great, great show. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us on the program this week, and of course, our many thanks going out to our guests, Gina Brillin and Mateo Lane. Also, thank you to our producer, Adam Brisson. We'd love for you to check out all of our social media and everything we've got going on our website, kellyalexandershow.com. Of course, we would really appreciate if you would also take the time to rate us on your favorite podcast platform, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, all of that would be much appreciated. So have a great week, and we're going to leave you now with Keita featuring Frankie Fade and Kevin Nash with Fly By on The Kelly Alexander Show.
So trees do grow, what people do die. Please don't let the time go, please don't let it fly by. Don't let it fly by, fly by, fly by. Don't let it fly by, fly by.
See what's best and I'm so faded. Feel like JT when I zoom, zoom, zoom. Feeling like a young Goku full moon, yeah. I'm in a haze way up, still raising. I'm in a chase real hot, yeah, I'm blazing. So high, I'm surrounded by so many clouds. I'm so high, I'm surrounded by so many clouds, yeah.
So many clouds, many clouds, yeah. Many clouds, many clouds.
To make it, yeah, yeah. I wanted to take it, yeah, yeah. Sometimes I feel wrong, yeah, yeah. But I'm amazing, yeah, yeah. Oh my god, I'm flexing in this, that my fly, fly. Oh my god, I'm lost up in this, don't wanna die, die. I don't know if I'ma get rich, but I'ma try, try. I don't care if shit don't work for me, I'm getting high, high. So many great shit coming my way, eh, eh, eh. Touch me, it's burnt, ay, ay, ay. If she bad and cute, I'ma get in her bed, ay, ay, ay. Good blue jeans got my mind away, ay, ay, ay.
The trees do grow up.